Welcome to Femcasters, a podcast and community where feminine wiles and ferocious female voices collide.
Femcasters was born from the idea that we can change the world one broadcast at a time. We are here to unite and elevate the voices of silence breakers just like you, girl wide.
Let's kick it, Karina.
Kick it. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today on Femcasters. I'm Karina, and I'm pleased and thrilled to introduce you guys all to Rick Sedler. Rick is a publisher, a media pro, and an expert storyteller. He's been instrumental in the growth of the Robb Report magazine, eventually leading them from the chief seat. He was later recruited by Elite Traveler as the founding publisher. Elite Traveler has become the number one luxury travel magazine that's distributed exclusively on private jets, and I have a question very specifically about that. Today, he serves as a CEO and founder of RMS Media Group, managing the company's owned and operated publishing operations, which includes North Shore, Ocean Home and Luxury Pools, and Outdoor Living Magazines, as well as their luxury media consulting and branding businesses. Phew!
What don't you do?
He does a lot.
It sounds it by that intro. Yes.
Yeah. So I do have one question that came up for me just in the last day because, well, I know Elon Musk has his own private jet and fleet of jets for the company. So do you happen to know if he has Elite Traveler on board those jets?
Well, that's a good question. So according to when I was last there, he is probably on the distribution list, but like any jet, and in this case, the owner of his own jet, I would assume, although I shouldn't say assume, because sometimes you can charter a jet, you can belong to a fractional jet, you can have your own jet. So if the owner doesn't like it, he tells the captain, take it off my jet.
Ah, I see.
Otherwise, the distribution outlet that has been set up would allow for the magazine to be placed on all private.
Oh, wow. Well, it's crazy.
I couldn't imagine he wouldn't want it, though.
I just saw a news report that a 19-year-old kid built a Twitter account that's tracking Elon Musk's private jet all over the country. So Elon offered him $5,000 to take it down. He said it could be a security risk for me or for the work that I'm doing, which some of which is involved, of course, with getting to space and everything else, right? Mm. But the kid said, hey, I get more pleasure from doing this than I would from $5,000. So, of course, I had to go to the Twitter page and I was just shocked at how much he does travel on that private jet. And I'm like, wow, I could tell what airbase he was going from, if he was circling overhead or landing at a different airport, all of that jazz. It was amazing the amount of detail that could be available to people.
Yeah, I read that as well, I think this morning. And I think he responded with, how about 50 grand? So, you know, you're talking about the world's richest man, depending on what the stock market does.
Right.
I don't care if you're 17 years old or 12 years old, you're still going to say, how about 50 or 500? So I do think, though, it's dangerous, though, for that to be public, tracking him everywhere. I can't believe that he found a way to do it. But there's all kinds of available, tracking software. If you were to look at a flight, you could track a regular jet airliner and find out where that jet's going. So I didn't know it was available for private jets, but crazy.
Yeah, apparently it's all in the public domain. My husband works for Joby Aviation. So when I brought it up to him last night, he's like, yeah, you could do that for anything. In fact, there's this, just give me the tail number and I can tell you where it is. I'm like, wow. So tell me, how did you get into this world of luxury media? I just think it's interesting as a specific subset of this whole marketing world.
When I started, it was in the early 80s. That was before you two were born, I think.
Not true. We're 70s but, babies.
Yeah, okay. So when I started in the early 80s, I was recognizing that I had some skills in telling a good joke, storytelling. People have said, hey, you should get into sales, right? Now, usually that means that you're really bad at sales because you sound like a salesperson. Especially today, you don't want to sound like a salesperson. You want somebody to say, gee, I really like you. I want to spend time with you. I could listen to your stories all day, not you sound like a salesperson. So back in the 80s, I found out about a company called Robb Report because my future sister-in-law just got a job there. It moved from Atlanta to Boston, and she was working in the art department. She said, Rick, you would love this. All of the guys remind me of you in sales. So I applied for a job, and they said, no, I'm not going to give you a job. You have no experience in selling. Just because your friend said you're a storyteller doesn't mean you could get a job here. We're looking for closers. So I said, all right, how about if I'll work for free. I'll stay here for 2 weeks. And at the end of 2 weeks, you don't have to pay me anything except if I sell something. You either say, okay, leave, or we'll hire you, stay longer. So I really wanted to learn. I love the job. I love the whole idea of working for a magazine that was mailed to millionaires. And my job would be to sell them ads for their private jets and cars and yachts and all that stuff. And so I wanted it so badly. I just said, I don't have to be paid. I want to learn it. I came back and told my father. He said, you're absolutely crazy. Who the heck would work for a company and not get paid? So at the end of the job interview, I said, listen, you have a desk open. That's why you interviewed me. Why don't I sit in that empty desk and work? And if I am not good, tell me to leave. He said, you know, I just called you. I just told you we needed a closer. And you know what? All right, you closed me. Go sit in the desk.
It's zero risk for them, right?
Zero risk, except that they had to sit with me for 2 weeks. But I said, hey, if it's less than 2 weeks and you can't stand me, get out. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to first make sure that they enjoyed my company and they got along with other salespeople and that I learned from them. And eventually, after a lot of training, I wound up on the phone and I started selling. And I still was on the straight commission only program, and I was really bad. But I read every single sales book you could think of. I practiced every night. I didn't want to lose the job. Mm-hmm. So I went from the worst salesperson to my boss actually coming to me, walking by the cubicles. Nice job, Joe. Nice job, Fred. Looked at me and said, you suck. And I thought I was getting good. But, it was motivation. You know, motivation doesn't always have to be positive. If you know you're about to get fired because you're not good, you better start getting good really soon. So I figured it out. I practiced. I started to make some sales. And I lasted 17 years. I mean, that's the short version, right?
And Rick, quite honestly, by harnessing that power of sales, you had to first sell yourself by throwing your hat in the ring.
Yeah.
You had skin in the game and you did it. There wasn't that ROI in terms of a salary, but you had to sell yourself, prove yourself, be of service to the Robb Report.
Yes. So when you ask the question about how I got into luxury, there's a standard directory of advertisers, agencies, and publications. We called it the Red Book. In that Red Book listing publications, they did not have a category for luxury. It was men's titles. Hmm. It was mostly men. It was 98% male at the time. So I contacted them and said, we're in the luxury category. We need a category. None of the other categories fit us. Well, we actually had a few other people request it, so we'll open a category for you. So that was not only my starting point, but really the beginning of a publication that dealt exclusively with luxury. So we called it the Manual for Wealthy Living.
Ooh, I think Karina and I would like to get a copy of the Manual for Wealthy Living. And it's so fascinating to me how there wasn't a category. You created your category. And Karina and I talk about this a lot as we're moving forward in our business. We see space where there is no category.
Yeah.
And that's where the innovation lies, and those who are bold enough to take those risks and chances.
Well, it's speaking to being a pioneer, right?
Pioneer.
Yeah.
Trailblazer. And it's scary to be the pioneer, the first one out there, because there is no track record.
Well, they say the pioneer, you'll recognize him because he's got the arrows in his back. The one that goes out first.
I love that.
But you have to have the audience. That was the important thing. When you're dealing with a magazine that helped people with money sell their toys, by the way, the number one longest running advertiser was somebody that sold a brass plaque that said, "He who dies with the most toys wins." Mm-hmm. And that was what it was all about back then. the luxury market has changed, but it was all about, you know, collecting things and having big mansions and multiple cars. I mean, there are many people who do that today, but it's more of luxury is more about the experiential than it is, you know, collecting things today.
Well, what I like about this topic in particular is you're talking to a hyper segmented marketplace, right? Mm. Like this is the 1% or even in some cases, the 10th of a percent. Like you're not going to sell a super yacht to even just your run-of-the-mill millionaires. Because at a certain point you become, that's essentially what you're talking about. It's like, oh, well, they're not quite in the category that I'm selling to. I need to talk to the billionaires of the world. And so how do I reach them? And so, you know, even in the world of something like podcasting, mm-hmm. we don't necessarily always think in these hyper-segmented terms. And if we're going to be really successful in a realm like podcasting, you need to be going for a specific target. And sometimes it can seem rather narrow, but as you get narrow, you get really clear on who your ideal customer is, and then you're able to have a stronger impact. So I wondered if you could talk about that segmentation and about what it takes to produce, let's say, even a magazine that specifically calls on those that are wealthy enough to afford a super yacht.
So in terms of the audience development, the magazine was, we called it a catamag. It was like a catalog in a magazine. And it had about 50 to 70 pages of products for sale. The sales department was also the marketing department. So we would look through hundreds of newspapers to find ads for all of these luxury items. So when we called and tried to sell them an ad, at the same time, we were actually promoting the magazine because we had to describe what it was, what it contained. Sometimes we sold an ad. Other times somebody said, I've never heard of this. I want to see a copy of it. So we would mail a copy out, charge them for the cost of the magazine and the postage. And we would also be commissioned on subscription sales. So 12 people, 100 calls each per day over the course of months and years, we really created the distribution and the subscribers based on pre-qualifying them because they had a car or a yacht or an expensive home for sale. I didn't look at it that way, but it really was a very unique and very successful way of building your audience because it's challenging, whether it's a magazine or a website or a podcast. How do you get your audience? Right? We were mostly telephone sales in a traditional boiler room setup. It really started to expand when we followed the trail of each of our vertical interests. So we would go to car shows. We'd go to the best car show in the world. We would go to boat shows and yacht shows, meet people and spread the word while we were trying to sell advertising. Tell them about the publication. We met people, we networked. Every person we told about our story, chances are we'd tell a number of other people. We tried to do business with them, but we really wanted to constantly, obviously, sell, but we also wanted to expand the brand. And the thing we learned is that wealthy people usually hang around other wealthy people.
Expanding the brand. And I am thinking about your tenure in magazine and print media, and it must have changed so much, but the idea of selling your brand and expanding your brand, has that changed a lot in terms of being agile in the market? You've obviously gone digital, but I imagine in order to be a success, you have to be agile.
Yes, you definitely do. So I learned selling, but specifically the person who wrote the script, the sales trainer, was charged with the whole idea that not only do you need to sell over the phone, but you need to sell to a very difficult to reach, and once you do reach them, difficult to sell clientele. Somebody who has no time, no patience, right? You had to get your message very quickly. You had to position yourself as an expert, even though the sales staff was in their 20s. We had to understand the mindset and the attitude of the person we were calling and mirror them, get their attention. The types of people that we knew as millionaires and very successful high net worth people, that's changed quite a bit. There is no perfect describe who the rich people are, because they're all different types of people. And today, you could have somebody that is a multimillionaire through cryptocurrency. Whatever they were like 2 years ago is really who they are now, except they have tons of money.
But you also bring something out that I think is really important, as you were just speaking of, the reality of getting those in-person connections, of networking to build the brand. These are things that I think sometimes people leave out in podcasting, and especially as we continue to go forward in this increasingly digitized world. So there's still value in these things, the power of connection, of building a relationship with your audience and finding new ways to do that. So I just wondered if you had any particular tips that you're potentially implementing now as we move into this more digitized media world.
Just think for a sec. When I started, we did not have the internet. We did not have a computer. We did not have email.
Did you have cell phones?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Did
you have typewriters?
We had typewriters. We had telexes.
It's crazy to think about how it's changed.
Do you remember computers back then? I mean, we're talking like Apple II here.
Like the green letters.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right, exactly. So in a lot of ways, you know, if you take that era, just try to think about what you, well, I can think of it because that's what I did, but what others may have done, people probably couldn't even imagine. What do you mean you just had a telephone? How did you get their telephone numbers? How did you reach people? So fast forward to where we are today, it's infinitely more possible and available for you to reach out to people. You could literally follow whoever you wanted to reach on some type of social media. So then it becomes more, now that I know they exist, I can actually see communication from them. What can I learn about their lifestyle, about their interests? And a lot of people, you know, let you into their lives. So you can find out whether they let you in, or you find out from somebody who's tracking Elon Musk's private plane that they have a private plane. You know, you can reach out to people through social media. You can find other people that might know them through social media based on reading comments. But if you engage in comments on somebody's post that allows for comments, you can communicate with them and just be, you know, like others that are commenting and communicating. But let's say you want to follow somebody. Elon Musk is really going to be tough. And I certainly wouldn't want anyone to think, well, if you were to learn the magic of reaching out to people, let's try it on Elon Musk, right? First of all, it's not difficult to find his email address. It's not difficult to find his social media, right? And become a member of that. But if you go a couple of notches down and not the richest man in the world, you can find ways to at least be present on their social media, find people that may know or work with somebody that you're trying to reach, get to know them. For instance, I was just talking to somebody that really wanted to interview Grant Cardone on his podcast because he's a coach, and that's been one of his heroes, somebody that he thinks is one of the best in the business. He tried without success to try to reach him, and so do 10,000 other people a day. So he actually bought a ticket and flew down to Grant Cardone's 10X in Miami. And something I've learned a while ago, if you become a customer, you've spent money with them, and there's some sort of obligation, and usually sessions where it's set up for you to meet and talk to and get to know the people that have come to this, in this case, a seminar. And so we talked to him. He said, listen, I've been following you for a long time. I really love what you do. I'm modeling my whole program after, you know, people like you that I follow for a long time. It would be my pleasure, my dream, in fact, if you could help me out and be on my podcast. And he agreed. So usually somebody with a high profile, it's not all about, promoting the value proposition of why they should join your podcast in this case. It's just not going to be there, especially if you're starting out. Features and benefits, you're really going to reach a lot of people. You know, come on, I'm Grant Cardone.
They're reaching more people than you reach in your show, typically, yes.
Okay, And they might say something like, I have 875,000 people following me on Clubhouse. 2.2 million people following my Instagram. What are you going to do for me again? Mm-hmm. So sometimes if they have a particular charity, if they have something that they care about, maybe they're a car collector, maybe it's something that they have fun with, and you decide to approach them based on how you could help them with that. A lot of athletes are approachable. If you start with, I can help with your charity, we can have a segment just about your charity. Celebrities know what you want. They know that you're trying to get them on the podcast because they know what it means to you. Sometimes if you tickle them the right way, they'll help you because they like you. Mm-hmm. They know what it means to say yes. And, you know, who was it? David Letterman. I think he joined Twitter and he followed one person, just one, a random person out in the Midwest somewhere, who immediately blew up to like 125,000 followers. And he mentions her every now and then. How's it going? How many followers do you have? How you doing? Just a mom with three kids living in a regular town in a regular house. And, you know, he got joy out of blowing up her Twitter account and had fun with the idea that she became somewhat of a celebrity. So people, most of the ones I've met, they know what they're giving. If you have a certain angle and you're really genuine about it, they might like to say, you know, kid, I'll jump on your show. They know it's going to blow up. But if you try to sell them and you're overbearing and you're pleased, you try to, you know, features and benefits, no. The 10,000 other people have tried the same thing.
They want something that's quick, to the point, three lines, get to it.
Yeah.
Deliver the ask, tell them what you hope to bring them or
they
the
need that
you
full body yes. The full body yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was just thinking specifically about Twitter. This is something I've heard from a variety of podcasters, and I wanted to touch on it for a minute. So, you know, a lot of celebrities, when they have social media, they tend to work with a social media management firm that covers their Instagram, that covers their Facebook, that covers all these other platforms. But many of them hold their phones for Twitter, and they just use it as a way to communicate directly with all of their fan bases. And so one of my friends in podcasting, Anne Marie Cannon, she has a podcast called Armchair Historians. She has reached out to many comedians and celebrities through their Twitters and just shared like, hey, I like the historical references that you make. I'd love to invite you on my podcast specifically to ask you the question of your favorite history and explore the topic, with a lot of success. So she's featured several different comedians on her show and taking kind of a humorous approach to specific histories that they loved. And then they got to talk about something that they were passionate about. They had a good conversation, good interview, and it's helped her podcast to grow. And I mean, it's an entertainment show more than anything, right? It's not like it's a personal development show. Like she's not going after the Seth Godins of the world, at least not yet. We'll see what happens.
Well, you know, they have to have some sense of feeling comfortable with their brand. They don't want to be cornered. They don't want to have you surprise them with a crazy question, which once they've started and it's filmed and recorded, they can't take back. They usually have people on their team that they'll ask about, should I go on this or should I not go on that? A PR person. They mostly say, no, my job is to get you on the best ones. Who the heck is so-and-so? I never heard of them. But people like and companies like up-and-coming unique ideas that look like they're starting to take off, and they like to get involved. They can be convinced to get involved early, but there has to be some foundation that's been built and some others that they can look at or listen to see how that journey is for somebody else. And, you know, I would suggest you have to start somewhere and then start to build up. Look at it like, who's the next best person I can get to? Don't go after somebody that says yes, you've never heard of, and then try to jump 10 notches up to get somebody else. Just start to build it over time. And go 5% up each time you look for somebody, get somebody that's a little bit better. And somebody will look back and say, well, you had Jim Smith on from XYZ company. Yeah, I'm similar to that guy. They'll say yes and keep going up from there. Plus, who would think that this with ESPN and everything in sports and news and all social media, that there's any room for another company, right? But There are newsletters that have a special niche, right? They do something that no one else does. There's still surprisingly space in, you know, an opportunity in something, if you do it a certain way, that's not a repeat, that has a particular twist to it that's different and unique. I used to think, you know, well, that's been done. Well, actually, they have competitors, you know, but they're, if it's different and you have an approach and you have a process and a system, you know, I think anything's possible and proven time and time again.
I love the tip that you gave in terms of getting in front of the person. Nobody wants to be sold. People want to be served. What is that common denominator when, if you are pitching an author and going 5% above your last guest? So that means you, Rick, are at the top of the food chain here today. You are at the pinnacle. But quite honestly, a lot of people are held back by the fear of being judged, the fear of denial that they won't come onto their podcast, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And it's just doing it and trying it and making those connections. Yeah. It all goes back to connections. I believe that it goes back to the old-fashioned way of doing business. It's about building those relationships, the handshake. And people think that just by having an Instagram account, a Facebook account, a Twitter account, that their business is going to blow up, their podcast is going to blow up, but it is about creating those relationships. And your friend who went down to see Grant Cardone, he was, in a sense, or she was, in a sense, building a relationship.
Yeah, relationship first.
There's so much power there, and people forget that all the time. They're chasing shiny objects instead of thinking what it really means to their business and to this person that they are looking to have join them in their mission.
Also, I think people just have to realize that I met a Hollywood producer at a yacht show in Florida, and he was pointed out to me. He's a producer of Law and Order, and he's a big shot. How many people approach him, see him, find out who he is, and start talking about Hollywood? What do you do? I've got a friend. I want to be an actor. All of those things, I never mention it. We had a 3-year relationship, 5-year relationship of going to boat shows, arranging to meet there, never once mentioned anyone he knew in Hollywood, anything about the business. All we talked about was things that we could share together and have fun. And he loved it. It was a safe space.
Well, what you're speaking to is friendship. You developed a friendship with him. Yeah. And it's a common interest, right? So that's the thing. We talked about this in a recent podcast episode where we were following the breadcrumbs of joy.
Right, Joel's, love that, Dr. Laura Berman.
That's right. And yeah, it's just like you guys have a common interest. You have something that you're both joyful about. You can bond over it, whether that's the sports teams that you like to go see or if you like to go fly fishing. I mean, it could be really anything. Exactly. So you found something in common and it served your business.
People forget these people are just regular people. They're human beings. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what we do is when we see a celebrity, when we see somebody we want to sell, when we see something that's, we immediately think of that would be great for me. That's how we approach it. And if you just say like any other sale that you would make, I just want to get to know the person, right? I just want to talk to them. I want to find commonality. Just like if you're chasing down a prospect at a company as a mid-level manager, right? So much is available today that wasn't before. You can learn about what they like, what they don't like, what they're passionate about. And so just start a conversation about that. And you'd be surprised when you find something that they love, how much they'll just start talking about it. And then if you have similar knowledge and can share stories back and forth, they'll keep talking. Because I went to so many shows that were specific to fashion and jewelry and watches and cars, I began to understand what a particular type of suit looks like, whether it was handcrafted, whether it was a bespoke suit, whether it was a cheap suit. I could look at a watch and figure out what kind of watch somebody was wearing. I could look at jewelry and say, oh, is that an Aaron Basha baby shoe you have on? Oh, I bought one of those for my goodness, it is. How did you know that? Oh, I bought one for my wife. That's a 20-minute conversation. Just because you can sort of pick out things. So that was my business. I had to get expert in figuring out how to start a conversation with somebody that didn't say, oh, hi, you're Mrs. Billionaire. I would like to get you to sign an autograph or take a photo or get you to buy something. People leap on these people rather than just having a conversation with them.
When you were immersed in this luxury living world, did you want the new yacht all the time, the new car, more jewelry for your wife? Or were you grounded in your principle? I have no idea. I would think it would be amazing to see all of this, but did you bring it home? Did you want to be a part, like literally a part of this lifestyle?
You know what? I thought I was pretty cool. I'd come home and tell stories. And frankly, it was a little tough because I wanted nice things. So that was part of the reason I started my company. I desperately wanted to, you know, the things you think about the most, right? You surround yourself with successful people. You surround yourself with, you know, Ferraris. I don't know anyone that would sell Ferraris and doesn't want a Ferrari, right? So I decided to go on my own, start my company and become successful outside of my experience of working for somebody else and, you know, start my journey to become successful myself. And I was left with just this burning desire to be successful using my experience in luxury and starting my own company. And it's worked out.
Well, I have a burning desire to learn more from you. And I think we're going to work to help you start your own podcast so that you can get that intelligence in the ears of many more people and help them on their journey.
Podcasting is something, you know, nobody today should run a print magazine company exclusively and nothing else. You have to be a media company and distribute that media on all those challenges. So podcasting is a channel. You can't overlook one because what we do now is we recognize if we have a handle on the audience that likes our content, that likes what we do, that likes our niche, our topic. And we recognize that the people that do have certain interests and those interests expand throughout all of social media. So if you want to reach your intended market, you have to be involved in all. You can find somebody that says, I only use Twitter. I don't like Facebook. I like Facebook. I don't use Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Clubhouse. I listen to podcasts all the time. So you really have to expand in all of those channels. So if you're a podcaster and you wanted to increase your audience, well, go to a publication or go to somebody else in another channel and network and, you know, try to work out a program where you can share assets, right? Share areas of expertise.
Right.
So that's why I'm interested in it. It's just, it's necessary.
We're not putting all our eggs in one basket. And that's what I always say.
No, you can't.
You can't.
You cannot.
Well, and in this day of age, we're all competing in a way for people's attention and time. Yeah. And the reality is we want more ability to cater what we're spending our time listening to and what we're spending our time watching to our interests. Mm-hmm. And so that has broadened the field of what can be successful in the world of podcasting, broadcasting, and media of all sorts. So we just need to get really clear on who our audiences are and then seek to reach them where they are. So if that's on those social media apps or if it's in social audio and it's on podcasts and in other media, then that's essentially where we need to go and be. Yep.
Shall we wrap this up with our inauguration into everything that is Femcasters, Rick?
Yes. Let's do
that. I know that you are our biggest fan, so you probably have heard this on all of our podcasts. At the end of every episode, we have our very special guest say, "Kick it."
And you want me to say that now?
But kick don't it. Say like, "Kick it."
Kick it.
Yes. That was probably our best kick it ever.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Femcasters. We hope you were inspired. We hope you were motivated. We hope you think a little bit differently about how your voice, your very own voice, can change the universe. So tap on those 5 stars, share the love, share this episode with another Femcaster that you think could use this message today.
And head over to Femcasters.com for all the goods we covered today, including tools to elevate your voice. You can join our exclusive community and celebrate the Femcaster in you. Together, we can elevate the power and the voice of women worldwide. Let's do this.